This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Mr. Chris Miles. How are you, Chris?
Fantastic. Excited to be in this little wolf's den.
Yes.
It's not that little. It's kind of big.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time today, and I'm excited for our listeners to kind of get to know you a little bit. So just a little bio on Chris. So Chris Miles, the cash flow expert, is a leading authority on how to quickly create cash flow and lasting wealth for thousands of his clients, entrepreneurs, and others internationally. He has been featured in U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, and has a high reputation for getting his clients life-altering financial results in his company, Money Ripples. After working as a traditional financial advisor and stock coach for several years, Chris came to a stark realization that the financial advising industry was not showing anyone how to quickly and safely become financially prosperous today. After leaving that industry, Chris was able to retire when he was 28 and has since worked to teach his effective, unique strategies for companies like Freedom Fast Track and Garrett Gunderson, and now Money Ripples, while exposing the popular myths around money that have kept so many from enjoying financial freedom and peace of mind. Chris consistently practices and teaches small business owners how to do what no other financial advisor can or will: achieve financial prosperity now and in the future, spending time doing what they love most. Again, Chris, thanks so much for joining us today, and give us a little bit of background on yourself. How did you all get started on this?
Yeah, you know, definitely not the way you expect. Maybe like many of us, where we go down one path in life, we think we have it all planned out when we're kids, and then it ends up going a completely different route. And that was like me. You know, growing up as a kid, like I was raised by typical middle class working parents, taught me good values. The one thing they didn't teach me very well was money.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, money was more of a scarcity thing in my family. It was always about, hey, we can't afford this. What do you think? Money grows on trees? I'm not made of money, you know. all that stuff you hear growing up from parents, right? And of course, you know, the worst one was when my dad said, my job's going to kill me. I will work until I'm dead. You know, and I thought, well, that's not the
You're
life
like,
I want.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, well, that's Mr. Sunshine, right? So I was like, okay, that's it. I'm not following his footsteps. Like any teenager, you never want to follow in your parents' footsteps, right? So when I went to college, I was the first one in my family to go to college, but I didn't want to be the typical employee. Right. There was just something about that that felt limiting. I wanted to have control of my own destiny, mm-hmm. my time, my money. So I want to be a business owner. In fact, I was going to become a business consultant. That was actually the path I was going on, even though I was majoring in sociology with a triple minor in psychology, Japanese, and ballroom dancing,
wow.
of all things. That's a whole
that's, yeah. that's a whole podcast, I think, on itself.
Stay tuned.
But yeah, like I was like, well, I should have real life business experience if I'm going to become a business consultant. So I dropped out of college with one class to go, planning just to take a 1 year sabbatical. And I thought, well, I should try to find some business to do. And the first thing that came up that kind of piqued my interest was becoming a financial advisor. Because I was like Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer, you know, when he goes in for a job at the bank, he's like, you know, they ask him, what's your experience with money? He's like, well, I like money. I like to have more of it. I have a jar on top of my fridge.
That's where you come in, right?
So that was kind of like what I thought. You know, I thought, well, I'd like to learn about it. And if anything, maybe I can give my dad some of his life back, because he thought he would work until he died. What if I just gave him 1 year of his life back?
Yeah.
So I thought, that's good for me. It's good for him. You know, let's give it a shot. Well, long story short, I stayed dropped out of college, never went back. I stayed on that path. And I was actually a financial advisor for about 4 years. But as you kind of read in that little intro there, you know, I started to realize there were some issues, mm-hmm. because I'm one of those people, I liked evidence. I like to know that things work. I like to see the proof in the pudding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too long that pretty soon my dad actually was asking me for financial advice.
Mm.
So I thought, okay, well, let's see what I can do here. Now you got to understand my dad, he's kind of like, he'd be like the guy that Dave Ramsey looks up to, right? You know, not only is he older, but he was the guy that saved everything. He was a cheap son of a gun. I mean, you look up cheap in the dictionary, and my dad's picture shows up, right? I mean, he's that kind of cheap.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, he was always the one that told me to save everything, pay off your debt. And so when I looked at his numbers, he'd saved up in his 401k, just like everybody's taught to do. He did all that. He paid off his debt early. He was so proud of it. He was even debt-free from his house, right? Everything was paid off. But when I looked at his numbers, I said, Dad, here's the thing. You're 61 years old. If you want to retire today, you better hope you die in 5 years. Because that's how long it's going to be before you run out of money. Okay, Chris, that's not what I wanted to hear from you. What do I do? And I said, I don't know, because you've done everything I would have recommended as a financial advisor. He basically was like a financial advisor's dream come true. Mm-hmm. Yet he wasn't financially free, even after decades of doing that stuff. Mm. And that bugged me.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I thought, well, how about the rest of my clients? And even the ones that were like retired physicians, mm-hmm. even them, they were still worried about running out of money. Mm-hmm. So they weren't truly financially free where they didn't worry about money. And then most importantly, I started looking around at the financial advisors around me. There was over 100 financial advisors in my office. Yet there were some of them that had been working there since the late 1970s, weren't financially free themselves. So again, I like evidence, but the evidence was all pointing to this is a bunch of crap, right? This doesn't work. So I had a choice to make. Either I put blinders on like some of my friends have done, and they know it, but they can't, you know, they have the golden handcuffs, right? Where they know that if they quit, they lose $500,000, sometimes millions of dollars a year of commissions that they earn. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. None of them are financially free without those commissions.
Yeah.
So it was either I do that or I stay in integrity and leave. And so I left. I chose the latter, became a mortgage broker, you know, or stay as a mortgage broker mm-hmm. instead. But I knew there had to be something better. And I remember I had a friend who left to do real estate investing. He was flipping properties and doing things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away that him and other guys were in their 20s and 30s and they were financially free. Yet I couldn't find any financial advisors that were financially free, right? So I started to learn from what these guys did. And next thing you know, later in 2006, I became financially independent where I was 28, almost 29 years old, out of the rat race. And I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do with my life now that I have all this time on my hands and I don't have to keep working? Now what? And that's where I kind of came out of retirement to coach people along the way and do what I'm doing today and helping people really get out of the rat race where they work optional. They work because they want to, not because they have to.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
That is an awesome story. I don't think I've ever heard that before. So thank you for sharing that.
And you beat us because I think we had a...
I know.
We started when we were 19. I think our original vision was like 28 to retire. And yeah, we're still 41. We're 41. And we're still doing
and
this.
And now Sean gave us 8 more years. Man.
But we're choosing to work.
We are choosing.
Yeah, recession kicked my butt. You know? So that's another story right there too.
Yeah. So tell us, give us some practical advice for our listeners and to us as far as what do you recommend that for clients to increase their passive income and cash flow? Mm-hmm. Is there certain type of investments you recommend? Can you get a little bit more, you know, in detail? I guess do you recommend savings? Do you recommend 401k utilizing that when they're in their company if they're working? Mm-hmm. You recommend just real estate? Kind of give us some advice there.
Yeah, the first thing I would say is get your money out of prison, mm-hmm. and 401k is definitely one of those prisons. Yeah. Think about it, you put all that money in, and it doesn't matter if you get a match. You can't get it back out. Mm-hmm. Who gives a crap, right? Like, how's that even change your life today? Let alone, do you even know you'll be alive when you're 60 years old, right? Mm-hmm. There, you may not be. I've actually in the last month, two friends pass away. You know, one was a client and he was 38 years old. Another one was 20 days younger than me. He's 45 and passed away just a couple weeks ago. And so you just never know. We don't have a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. What can you do to actually bless your life today? What can you do to actually have that freedom that you've dreamed of instead of, you know, singing with tears in your eyes, cats in the cradle, because you missed your family growing up, thinking you're going to sacrifice for so many years until you want to be with your kids and they don't want to be with you anymore, or they're already raising their own families and you're too late, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing that you got to do is get your money out of prison. So get it out of those kind of plans, out of those 401ks and things like that, or, you know, get your money out of equity of your home potentially. Again, make sure you're a wise steward of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Places where money's just locked up. And in fact, almost anything you've been given financial advice of doing is about locking away your money away from you. If you pay off your house extra early, you're locking money away into the bank's control, but not your own. If you're, again, putting money in a 401k, you're putting into a financial institution's hands, not your own. Even if you put it in a bank, at least it's liquid. That's right. Better. But remember, they're still making money off you. They're literally making bank off of you, right? Mm-hmm. So turn those tables around in your favor instead. And so we talk about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, over 20 different investment type operators in our group. I mean, you guys are even actually on that list, mm-hmm. you know, where We have turnkey providers, people like that. And so when we look at trying to match it up, if you're like looking for cash flow, especially, which most of our clients are, mm-hmm. they want cash flow now versus, you know, growing their money for 10 plus years. You know, right now I see the best opportunities being like turnkey properties for one. I know you guys have your own turnkey company as well, mm-hmm. but turnkey investment properties, I mean, they're still awesome. Even though mm-hmm. the cash and cash returns have come down, we've been so spoiled. Mm-hmm. But even despite that, when you look at the overall growth of what you can get from a rental property, especially if you don't have to manage it, oh my right. gosh, so much easier when you have somebody else do that for you. I made that mistake before the last recession. I was my own property manager and I was such a pushover. I would never like force people to, you know, or try to incentivize people even to pay me. So, I mean, I was horrible. I was negative cash flow on properties because I was just a crappy property manager. So now I buy turnkeys, even though I've done active real estate. I don't like active real estate. I love passive.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have guys like you do that so I can just hand it off.
So you go to Hawaii for 30 days.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's so much easier that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's one strategy for sure that I love. And it's been kind of my go-to for a while now. Mm-hmm. The other one I like, you know, there's things like lending. You know, obviously you can do lending, whether you lend on an individual deal, whether you're doing it in a fund, which is more diversified, mm-hmm. right? There's still deals paying at least 8-10%+ a year mm-hmm. on things like that. Even oil and gas. I even got money in more mineral rights where it's kind of a way to double dip. It's almost like mm-hmm. a triple net lease, but mm-hmm. for oil, you know, oil land, right? Because you can get paid on the land, but you also get paid the royalties on the drilling they do. So you don't do any of the drilling. The oil companies basically rent the land from you and do the drilling and then share the profits with you too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's things like that. My best investment right now is actually a partnership I did with a guy where, you know, or a couple of guys, you know, where they're actually investing my money to buy raw land. Mm. You know, and we're making like about a 48-49% cash on cash return on that, you know? And so that's great too. You know, again, there's not like these things are, you know, no risk. And again, we're not giving any advice. You know, I'm not even saying there's anything wrong with doing syndications like with apartment buildings mm-hmm. or self-storage. I think self-storage is actually going to be much better this year than last year. Last mm-hmm. year's kind of sucked.
Yeah.
But there's so many just different options that when you look at what's available to you and how many things you can actually do, looking at mutual funds, which have high risk and lackluster returns, the S&P, by the way, averaged 7.7% in the last 30 years. That sucks. And they have to pay taxes on that. It doesn't matter if it's in a 401ks, IRAs, or just plain old mutual funds. You get taxed on that crap. Mm-hmm. And then you take all the risk. And then what happens if you have like last year where it drops 20%? Oh, I guess I won't retire this year. I'll just wait till it comes back up. Well, what if that takes 10, 15 years? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be caught in that trap. You know, that's what happened to my dad. That's what's happened to millions of Americans today, right now, that are caught in that trap thinking that they've got enough. And then when the market hits them, they wonder if they're going to have to come back as a Walmart greeter. You know, that's just not the life to live.
Right.
Yeah. I've heard you say, you know, the saying about fixing your money mm-hmm. leaks. Can you explain mm-hmm. that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So it's good to play offense. But as you know, a defense is really good too. You know, we saw that with the Super Bowl recently, didn't we? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like an intense game. Mm-hmm. And it really came down to is, you know, who, you know, two great offenses, but who actually was able to stop them just enough to let the offense win. Mm-hmm. And that's true in money too, is that you got to have a good solid defense with an offense, right? You know, as a, I'm trying to remember, the name of the baseball coach, but, Bear Bryant. Yeah. Bear Bryant. He actually said, he's like, offense sells tickets, but defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So with money, it's the same thing. Like money leaks are kind of the defensive strategy you take. You know, start tracking your money. You know, that's one thing I made a mistake before the last recession is that money was coming in so abundantly. It was like air. You just don't count the breaths that you breathe until the air is taken away. And then you count every single breath. Same thing with money. When it starts getting taken away, you count every little dollar. I mean, how many investment operators do we know or guys are like wholesalers and flippers mm-hmm. that got their butts kicked in 2022. And all of a sudden now they're counting dollars. Before they're like, I can get sloppy on my buy box. Right. And okay, I can get away with it because everything appreciates. Yeah. And then when it stops appreciating, they're like, crap, I'm gonna go bankrupt, right? Yeah. You gotta track your money. You gotta mm-hmm. know what money's coming in, what money's going out, and be efficient with it. Like you don't have to be cheap. Don't live on rice and beans like our good old friend Dave Ramsey says. That's bull crap, you know? You don't have to do that. It's really about how can you show up in a way that allows you to bring in the maximum amount of money by creating the most value possible. But then when it comes to spending, finding out what's really productive for you, what's really productive, which really adds value to your life and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so just, if you're just getting in the real habit of tracking, if not weekly, at least every other week, doing that, both in business, if you're a business owner, as well as your personal life, you'll find out you'll start getting more money back. Things like that.
Yeah.
You know, other money leaks are like selling off assets, mm-hmm. you know, or getting rid of things, you know, just cleaning out, decluttering, right? Yeah. You know, telling like Marie Kondo, what brings you joy? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, really like looking to get rid of those things, you know, sell them off and use that money to make you more money, you know, or donate it.
Yeah.
Just, it's funny. One of our mutual friends, David Phelps, you know, he was at an event. We were at an event together and he had on a back table, hundreds of books stacked up that he was trying to get rid of to whomever would clutter.
That's awesome.
Just all this clutter. Yeah. His wife says, clean out this hole. Right. And so he threw it back there. He's like, please guys, take it home. I don't want to bring it back home with me. Well, it's like, well, even if you don't bring it home, the cool thing is if you have a lot of books and or movies, you know, CDs, things like that, media type of stuff, mm-hmm. you could donate it to a library and get double the tax write-off of giving it to Goodwill.
Yeah.
So if you have a city library, you'll get double the tax write-off just doing that, you know? So if you can't sell it, you know, that's my mantra. If you're not going to use it, lose it, you know, mm-hmm. sell it, donate it, give it away, whatever, but find a way to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. And it applies so much to business. Cause I learned a hard lesson a couple of years ago with, we had some success in business and then I started a new one in a different industry I've never been in. And, I didn't watch the money like I did. You know, when you're starting out your first business, you didn't have no money. So you're just like, you're scraping you're watching every penny because you didn't have any. But when you start something and you have it, it's like
you're buying all these tools that you don't need.
Yeah, we'll just buy everything new. We'll just do this. And it's all of a sudden mm-hmm. you're like, wait a minute, like where did all the money go? And it just weren't watching it.
Yeah.
You weren't, you know, on it like you were at the beginning. And I think you're more resourceful too when you watch it. And I think, what was the saying? Like if you study, that money goes to it's along those lines, but it's saying, you know, that
where your attention grows, money grows.
Yeah,
something like that. Money grows, yeah, like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that law of attention, right? You know, mm-hmm. whatever you put mm-hmm. your attention towards will expand and grow.
Correct.
But whatever you ignore will leave you. It's like, for example, if you ignore your teeth, you're going to lose them, right?
Yeah.
You ignore your spouse. Yeah. You'll lose your spouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you ignore your money, you'll lose it too. It's an eternal law.
Yeah.
It applies to everything.
Correct.
That's so true.
That's awesome.
So Chris, what would you recommend to clients that maybe are just starting out? Maybe they're in their 20s and just starting out. What would you recommend?
I'd recommend one. I mean, like I said, keep in your case, instead of get your money out of prison, keep it out of prison. Mm-hmm. Right. So don't get tempted by that HR director that says, hey, I'm in charge of your benefits and I don't know anything about money, but this 401k is the best thing to do. Don't do it, right? Don't fall for that crap. I remember I actually had a corporate job, you know, before I became a financial advisor, even while I was starting to get that business going. And I remember the benefits person said, she was selling the 401k, pitching it. And she was saying, you want to do this 401k because, you know, like you don't pay tax when it goes in, but then you'll pay tax when it comes out. But it's okay because when people are old, they don't really spend money. And so you'll be in a lower tax bracket. So it's genius. You should all do the 401k because you'll be able to save on all these taxes. And I'm like, okay, you're full of crap. And I'm like, I was 24 at the time. I'm like, I know that this is not true. And that's the case. Like when you're young in your 20s, like start to save it up, but keep it in your control. Mm-hmm. And you can just do it in a bank and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, store in a bank is better than nothing. But here's the thing. Don't get so hyper focused on trying to make money right away. Don't be like, I've got $1,000. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Just keep saving.
Yeah.
Now you could do things like there are strategies like we teach a very unique strategy or even a version of infinite banking mm-hmm. that we do, which is called like max ROI infinite banking, which is lower cost type of life insurance that you can use to save up in. Like it's really like a tax-free supercharged savings account. But again, you got to design the right thing. You can't just do any old life insurance policy because then you'll waste so much money and lose opportunity to invest when you're still in your 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make sure you design it right. But that's one strategy you can do to actually build up savings quicker than just putting in the bank earning 0.0%.
That's, I like that.
Yeah.
Love that. Go a little deeper on the infinite banking. You can, it's a life insurance, but it's where you can build equity into the policy and then borrow against it to invest. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's, you know, you always hear about life insurance, like term insurance. That's really just death insurance. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, you only get paid out. Actually, you don't get paid anything. You pay into it and then you die and somebody else gets paid, right? That's term insurance.
That doesn't sound right. But, I mean, I'm saying like it doesn't sound fair, but yeah.
It doesn't sound fair. That's what you think. Yeah.
It's not too sexy. It's pretty simple. It's like car insurance. You only use it when it's too late.
Yeah.
You know? But you know, with this one, like specifically we talk about whole life. Universal life doesn't really work the same. So I don't recommend that, even though I used to, you know, be a fan of it 20 years ago. Whole life insurance is guaranteed. It's kind of like a Roth IRA in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. but you don't have all the limitations set to it. Mm-hmm. So it has that death benefit, but it also has this tax-free savings account inside of it. They call it cash value, right? You have mm-hmm. this cash value account that you can grow money in. Now, unfortunately, if you do like what 99%+ of what insurance agents will do, you'll have all this money going into it and you'll have almost zero in that cash account. It almost all goes to insurance costs, especially in those first couple of years. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's what I was sold. Even when I started doing the real estate investing, a lot of these real estate investors were so like hyped up on infinite banking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the guy that sets up infinite banking policies. And even though I was insurance licensed, I said, I don't understand this as much as you do. I'll just trust you. And I remember I set it up. And then just over 2 years into it, I was going into that third year, the recession hit hard. I was in the hole. I was in the hole like $16,000 a month. So I went from millionaire to upside down millionaire about 2007 into 2008. Mm. And I didn't have enough money to pay into it. I had mm-hmm. paid $25,000 into it and I couldn't pay any more. So I remember calling the company. I said, hey, is there a way to keep this going, you know, without me paying into mm-hmm. it because I paid so much already? And they said, no, because there's no cash in it. And I was like, oh, that sucks. I found out later that the guy sold me the highest commission type of life insurance possible. He sold me really just something that paid his pocketbook, but didn't pay me. When I found out you can actually design them to have a lower death benefit. So you don't really have to worry about getting a big one, get a low death benefit, but get the max amount of cash in that still stays tax-free and hidden. Oh, by the way, it's hidden from the IRS in the sense that you don't pay any taxes on it. You don't report it every year. Mm-hmm. But what's nice is if you ever apply for a loan, like if you're going to buy a real estate property, the cash in there does count as emergency reserves, as those cash reserves. So whenever you do a mortgage application, they'll say, what's your credit score? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your debt to income ratio and what's your cash reserves like? And because I've seen people with 850 credit scores get denied a loan because they didn't have any cash. Mm-hmm. Same thing. You can actually use the cash in here as proof. But the cool thing is it doesn't show up as proof for taxes and it doesn't show up as proof if you're ever trying to get college scholarships for your kids because it doesn't count against you on that. You can have millions of dollars in there and it doesn't count. Mm. So anyways, you have this cash account that's in there that you can use whenever you want, not for retirement, like they all say, although you could do that. But what's nice is you can have money in there from day one if you do it right. And then that money can be used. You can, of course, withdraw it and just invest it. But what we recommend is instead get a line of credit against it. Mm. You get this collateral line of credit that's against it, just like you do with a mm-hmm. savings account. If you had a savings account with money in it, you can get a line of credit from the bank to say, hey, here, I can just go and borrow it. The money's still in the savings account earning interest, but now you have this loan that you're paying on too.
Right.
The difference though with this one is that the interest they pay you is much, much higher than what you get at a bank. They're paying you like 5%+ on this money while you're able to also leverage it at the same time. So what happens is between the interest you pay them and what you're making, usually it adds at least 1-3% a year on top of whatever you have. Mm. So let's just say you're earning 8% a year on your real estate investment. Cool. Well, how'd that be if that also went from 8-10% using the same money you would have used anyways? Mm-hmm. And so there's that ability for you to compound your money faster inside of it, use that money to go and invest in the properties, take the cash flow, put it back towards that line of credit to pay it down. It's kind of like velocity banking with when people use that with their mortgages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same strategy, but we're using the life insurance. You end up double dipping on your money. You make money in two places at the same time.
Very cool. I love that.
Yeah. So now that we touched a little bit on the recommendations for a 20-year-old or somebody starting out. What about somebody
in their 40s, maybe?
Yeah, you know, working, probably, yeah, middle income, you know, kids, busy careers, mm-hmm. you know, but they're looking to build their retirement account. Maybe not, maybe they want to retire early, you know, they still have that possibility and looking to increase their retirement accounts and passive income. What do you recommend for them?
Well, make sure your vehicle matches your goal, mm-hmm. right?
It's So true.
You know, like yeah. if you want to, like you said, retire early. And we get a lot of people, especially if they're like right around, you know, late 30s to 40s, mm-hmm. they'll say, I want to retire at 50. Like, great. Well, what are you doing right now? I'm max funding my 401k. You realize they don't want you to touch that till you're 59 and a half, right? Or at least till you quit your job or get fired. I don't right. recommend doing that, you know? Oh, yeah, I guess so. Okay, well, the vehicle doesn't match up the goal, right? So if you want to retire early, then we better put it in some vehicles that actually help you retire early, you mm-hmm. know? And that's why often conversations like buying investment real estate, like turnkey real estate properties come up, or doing different types of funds or syndications, things that will generate cash flow for you now. Or if you're still trying to build up that cash, at least get some growth on it so that you can keep reinvesting it, building it, and create what I call like is this income avalanche, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, for example, you know, if somebody has, and I'll just use easy numbers here. Someone comes to me, they say they have $250,000. Great. Let's say we take that $250,000, we're earning you about a 10% a year return. Well, that means you make $25,000 a year of passive income. By the way, that's way better than a mutual fund because, you know, the financial advisor, a good one, will say, don't pull off more than about 2 or 3% a year. Mm-hmm. So think about it. If you have $250,000 in a mutual fund, you know, whether it's a 401k or whatever, you pull off 3%, you pull off a whopping $7,500 a year, and then you pay taxes on it. Like, wow, I just made $400-$500 a month after taxes. Man, let's party, you know? It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you think that $250,000, say that generates now a 10% return, that's $25,000 a year. And then what you do that $25,000, you reinvest it again. And now your $25,000 becomes $27,500. And then you reinvest that $27,500 mm-hmm. and you do it again. That's not including anything else that you're adding with savings too. So when I get people that are saying, yeah, I'm max funding my 401k, well, that's $20,000 a year. Well, if you add that to your $25,000 a year you made that year, that's $45,000. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? That next year, now we're earning almost $30,000 a year instead of $25,000. Mm-hmm. Year after that, it gets over 35 and it just gets better and better. That snowball just gets bigger and bigger, right? It creates that avalanche.
Yes.
And right. so it's not hard to really be able to retire within 10 years if you have at least even a few hundred thousand dollars to start with between savings, other investments you've done, or home equity or whatever. If you get that money working for you, it's not too hard for people mm-hmm. to usually retire within 5 or 10 years comfortably.
Yeah.
Sweet. So let's go one more step. So what about people in their late 50s, 60s, getting very close to retirement age, the traditional retirement age, you know, what, and they have their 401k, I'm assuming, and but they're nervous that it's not enough, you know, probably like your dad scenario. Mm-hmm. And you've kind of yeah. touched on it.
Yeah.
What would you advice would you give them? Or did you give your dad?
Yeah, with yeah. them, cash flow is everything, isn't mm-hmm. it? I mean, right. they don't really worry about like, hey, what's the long-term growth going to be? Because they want to know how it's going to affect their day-to-day living today.
Right.
You know, give me an example. I had a guy, he was actually on my podcast, on our Money Ripples podcast. And he was like the fourth highest ranking colonel, you know, in the California National Guard. So that doesn't mean much, as he says. He's like, it doesn't mean much. It just means I'm the guy that actually got the call at 3 a.m. where the other three generals above me didn't get the phone call at late at night. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with him, he said that he had $1 million he saved in his 401k. So he got a nice little retirement. Yeah, he's getting a little bit of pension from the government too. But he knew it wasn't enough because that $1 million. And by the way, he missed Y2K in the sense that he pulled his money out of the market just before Y2K hit. Wow. And then he put it back in at the low. And then he pulled his money out of the market in 2007, right before the market tanked again in the Great Recession. Uh-huh. So this guy had the perfect timing on everything.
Yeah.
His max funding is 401k. And still, even though he did better than almost anybody else I've seen with a 401k, he only had $1 million uh-huh. after decades of wow. savings. Well, he said, $1 million, Chris, I just realized I'm going to be making $30,000 a year. Who in their right mind in California can live on $30,000 a year? You know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And so we said, well, let's get away from that. And so some of it we still kept in the IRA, but some of it we got out of it, you know, and mm-hmm. kind of moved it around, bought some properties. He did buy like a duplex, for example. He also went into some syndications, including some like oil and gas type stuff. He did some things with apartment investing. And then he did some other things with short-term lending and whatnot. Mm-hmm. His now, as an update, his $1 million isn't creating $30,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. And then he has to pay tax on it. So he's really walking away with $2,000 a month. Now it's actually generating $11,000 a month.
Wow.
After just 1 year. And so he went from crap, I don't know how I'm going to retire, even though they forced me into retirement, to now I can yeah. do whatever the heck I want. And so now he actually goes and works as a contractor, just does part-time work. And he takes all that extra money and just keeps reinvesting it to build up that cash flow even more. So now he's going beyond $11,000 a month to try to keep building that higher and higher. Yeah. So if anybody's in their late 50s into 60s, you've got some options. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some things you can be doing, even if you keep inside the IRAs, the 401ks, maybe not the work 401k. Oh, by the way, here's a bonus tip. If you work for a company, and let's just say you're over the age of 59 and a half, you can, unlike in your younger years, you can access your 401k money at work. Because most people will just tell you, if you're at work, it's locked up, you can't use it. Mm-hmm. But when you turn 59 and a half, you have what's called in-service distributions, which allows you to access that money. So I remember I had a client about 10 years ago, he had about $400,000 he saved up in his 401k. He was able to take out everything but $3,000. Mm. So he said, well, let's do that. And then, and back in this time, this is during the depth of the recession, he went and bought REOs, right? He ended up buying with that $400,000 a bunch of, you know, foreclosed properties from the bank, portfolios of properties. He was able to buy that. He bought almost $1 million worth of properties with his $400,000. Wow. And so he was able to grow his money very quickly because he was over the age of 59 and a half. So if you're in that group, there could be some additional options you have that will allow you to do some really, really cool things.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
So, I mean, I had a question for you with, and you learned a lot, I know, in 7 and 8. So in that time frame, is there anything, since we're, you know, recession and economies changed significantly, is there anything you're recommending to your clients, you know, to hedge against loss, to protect their cash flow? Are you recommending any changes, or do you recommending just being prepared and being able to capitalize on some of the opportunities that are coming?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the big thing, and this is some of the stuff that I guess I've been recommending the whole time, because I've kind of been preparing people for the inevitable recession that's here to come, right? And whatever, you know, now we're gonna have the everything bubble of 2020, 2021, now it's starting to burst, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, keeping cash on hand is important. And that's where we'll have people diversify cash. Some of it will be held inside their infinite banking policies, you know, where you'll actually make more than 0.0%, while others will be kept in the bank, right? Mm-hmm. We're doing things like that. But for the most part, the big focus is really on cash flow and profit. Mm-hmm. You know, even like with people buying properties, you know, sometimes they'll look at property and say, hey, I've got this property in California. Yeah, I'll make zero cash, net cash flow after all my expenses, but I think it's good. You know, if it appreciates, then I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. My number one advice right there is don't bank on appreciation. Yeah. Right? If you buy a property, don't just count on that it's going to appreciate every single year, because we don't know if it's going to do that. That's a mistake I made in the before the last recession. I was, you know, one, I didn't keep enough cash reserves because I locked it up in my home equity. That's another thing I'd probably recommend, is maybe look at ways to get access to that home equity. Mm-hmm. Two is like what I just said there, is don't bank on appreciation. You know, I was willing to take negative cash flowing properties in the last, before the last recession, because I thought, well, if it appreciates, who cares? It'll make up for it. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll make up for my sloppy work of investing, which it didn't. It just put me in a tighter position because now they weren't cash flowing anything. Yeah. So really, cash flow is everything. That profit, you know, having more coming in, especially if there's things like vacancies or maintenance issues that might come up with those properties. You know, you might want to keep a little extra cash in those accounts versus just liquidating everything and investing it all. You might just keep some extra cash on hand just in case, you know, because you never know. I'll also say this, if you're going to buy properties, buy more than one. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you guys could probably, probably support that too, is the people that buy one property, if everything goes right, they think real estate's always great. But if you buy one property, it goes wrong, then they think every property they're going to buy from you is wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so I tell people like, no, buy at least minimum two or three at once, you know, buy those properties, have a little mini portfolio, plan to add to it a little bit. And then you'll notice that, crap will happen from time to time, but overall, you'll notice that you'll still make a really good return and you get to keep most of it because you're writing off all that money on your taxes, you know? So all the income coming in is almost, if not fully tax-free, it's going to be pretty darn close to it, you know, especially when you have a good CPA.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend, like right now, as people buy real assets, they don't bank on appreciation. They focus on cash flow, and you really focus on the things that actually have real value. Avoid the crappy arbitrary stuff like stocks right now or Bitcoin and that kind of thing. Just focus on real assets that have real cash flow.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for that. So we have some listeners that, you know, they're thinking about starting their own business. What advice would you give them?
Get, you know, ask people that have done it before you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great if you're watching podcasts like this. This is perfect because this is free information, right? And that's, you know, that's an infinite rate of return for you. But ultimately, you should find someone to help mentor you, kind of give you a perspective. Now, if you're flat broke, I get it. This might be your best option. I mean, I remember, you know, in the last recession, I was more than flat broke. I was over $1 million in debt. So the homeless guy on the street was actually $1 million richer than I was during the last recession, right? If you really put that in perspective. And, you know, the only thing I could do was listen to, you know, Audible books, right? Or read books.
Right.
Or I'd, you know, I even like, you know, turn on YouTube and listen to that, because getting other people's voices in my head, not that I'm saying like everybody, you should always listen to everybody else and not listen to your own intuition, because I think intuition is good. Mm-hmm. But when I got other people's voices in my head, I would elevate to that level, right? Like if I wanted to learn more about, you know, business, I would start listening to guys like, you know, Simon Sinek, for example, or I just blanked out. I can see his face, bald. I just blanked out on his name, but there's lots of great books out there, right? I would probably avoid guys like Gary Vaynerchuk or whatever, where you might burn yourself out because you can create some bad habits there, even though he has good stuff. You just have to really get into the weeds to hear the good stuff versus the sound bites. You got to be careful of the sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just really find ways to do that. Mastermind with other people, network. I remember I was asked on an interview once, on a business interview. They said, if you were basically starting over again, you were given $500 and a week to use your $500, what would you do? I said, I would find 10 people, take them out to breakfast or lunch or whatever, and spend that $500 just on that networking and creating those connections and seeing how I could serve those people. How can I create value for them first, mm-hmm. serve them first? And then, of course, you know, then we can find ways to exchange or do whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've learned the easiest, fast way to build a business is through having good, genuine, sincere relationships, and relationships where you're focusing on serving other people. Because ultimately, dollars follow value. Mm-hmm. Money comes from you solving problems or serving people in a way that money is exchanged, because they want that in their life. They know that their lives are better with you in it than not having you in it at all. That's the big focus of any business, is how do I show up serving people and solving problems mm-hmm. in a way that blesses people's lives? And if you focus on that, you know, then you'll never want for money.
Yeah, love it. So Chris, if you can go back in your early 20s, what advice would you give yourself?
Retire at 25. Well,
that was one of them right there.
Retire at 20.
That's right. Retire before 28.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's, I would definitely say that, like what I just said there, that dollars follow value.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think that dollars followed luck or exploitation, right? Like you had to screw somebody over. Like it was a win-lose scenario, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody had to lose for me to win, was my mindset growing up. I mean, heck, even my dad ripped on rich people a lot, you know? So I grew up with that perspective, not realizing that wealth is often just a byproduct of service, right? It's really just a receipt of service. Mm-hmm. That's all money is.
Yeah.
I would have focused on that and showing up, not just in finding the right business, right? But figuring out what are my talents? Like, mm-hmm. what do I have to offer that's valuable to other people? My talents, my knowledge, my experiences, and how can I use that in a way that blesses people's lives, that helps solve problems for them and creates a solution? If you become a solutions provider, it's so much easier to succeed in life. And this is even true if you become an intrapreneur working for somebody else mm-hmm. as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different. It's the same exact principles that always work in any market, any economy, any recession or depression. It's always worked 100% of the time. You just got to figure out what it is you can deliver. And so focus on how you can serve people and show up in the highest version of you. And then basically just do the opposite of what everybody else does. I think that would be the second piece of advice mm-hmm. to my younger self, is whatever the mainstream is saying, do the opposite, because the mainstream pretty much sucks, right?
Yeah.
Like ordinary produces ordinary results, mm-hmm. right? Being ordinary will get you ordinary results. Mainstream gives you ordinary results.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want extraordinary results, you got to do something that's outside the norm.
Yep.
You know, what we're doing, what we're preaching right now is completely outside the norm. Even though we call it Main Street investing versus Wall Street investing, the truth is everybody's told to do Wall Street investing, but that has been proven never to work, but people still pretend it does.
Mm-hmm.
But doing the stuff on this Main Street, this alternative investment path, has been proven to work. We got 25 million millionaires in the United States. All of them have done real estate investing of some shape or form. I haven't seen too many do that in the stock market. It's been really hard to find millionaires in mutual funds. It's very, very, they're very few and far between. So go where there's evidence, go where there's actually been proof of something that works, and then follow that model.
Yeah.
Love it.
Awesome. Yeah. So this question actually comes from our good friend and your good friend, David Phelps. He always talks about what's your next. So what's your next, Chris?
I'm living it. I mean, like I said, I've been able to retire twice. You know, I'm kind of living in my next right now, which mm-hmm. is teaching, you know, but even to go further than that, the next within my next has been that I've been firing myself. So
nice. I love it.
Give us an example.
Yeah. Because at the end of 2016, I was financially independent for the second time. So I remember beginning of 2017, I was just like, cool, this is awesome. We're snowbirding in California for a couple months. And I realized that I get bored. Like if I don't work at least 10 to 20 hours a week, mm-hmm. I lose that fire. You know, you can work too hard and burn out, mm-hmm. but if you don't work enough, at least in my case, you actually fizzle out. Mm-hmm. You have that lack of fire. So either you've burned too much or you burn too little. Mm-hmm. I like to find that happy balance. And so I kept doing my Money Ripples podcast. You know, I was doing that through that period of time, but I kind of lost purpose. And then about 2017, going to 2018, that's when the opportunity had shown up. I actually got into the infinite banking space again, because there's so many people doing it wrong. It pissed me off. Mm-hmm. So it kind of drove me out. You know, actually there was other podcast hosts that actually got me to do infinite banking again, funny enough. if it weren't for them, I probably wouldn't have done it myself. But also just the consulting. I love teaching and helping people's lives.
Yeah.
But now, because it's organically kept growing, I kind of kept it small shop. I was like, I'll just work with whomever I want. Well, it just kept growing, especially with the podcast. There were so many more people coming in. I couldn't handle it all. Mm-hmm. So I started hiring more people to come in and step in and replace me, you know, fire myself. And now I'm stepping more in the CEO role versus the, you know, in the weeds kind of role that I've been in the past. So now I have a CMO, I have a COO, you know, as well. And it's kind of becoming a real actual business. And our goal is really just to kind of really just revolutionize what's going out there with money. You know, it's really kind of what we do is like, it's everybody's rich dad, poor dad, and they get pissed off because it doesn't tell you what to do. We're basically rich dad, poor dad applied. It's like, well, great. How do you actually make it work? Here you go. And this is where you can actually become a passive investor, making it work, not passive like everybody else says in marketing, right? Where they say, mm-hmm. oh, you can be passive investor. And then you realize, oh, I'm going to learn how to flip properties. Mm-hmm. There's nothing passive about that. Like that's a business, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's really about kind of taking that next step and really just making it big and making it grow into something that's beyond me, that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
Where did the Money Ripples come from? The name, the Ripples. Yeah. Just
is there? Yeah, it's funny because it actually came while I was on a run, you know, which now I do a lot more of. I'm a marathoner now, right? But at the time I was just working out because it was cheap and I didn't have much money. So you know, it's easier to go running than buying a $2,000 bicycle or more, right? Couldn't afford the gym, you know, so I had to, you know, go buy running shoes. But I was working with a guy named Garrett Gunderson. He wrote a book called Killing Sacred Cows. It's kind of like a rich dad, poor dad type mm-hmm. book. And we were partners together for 6 years, but I had this feeling that I was going to be doing my own thing. And it was pulling me, you know, and I was trying to find a website with cash flow in it, you know, but anything with cash flow in it costs you at least $10,000 to buy the website. And so it was driving me nuts because for a few weeks, I could not come up with a name for this new entity I was trying to form, this new company. And then when I was out for a run, I thought, you know what? Forget about the name. What's my vision? And I started focusing on the vision. And up to that point, I'd already helped tons of people find and free up cash. You know, like I stopped teaching people how to get out of the rat race when I was back in it because then I'd be a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. But I started teaching people how to find money during the last recession to help them be able to then have money to invest and then figure out what to do from there. Well, we helped hundreds of people free up like literally like millions and millions of dollars. So I started thinking about one couple in particular. They're from North Dakota. They were chiropractors, you know, and the husband was working 6 days a week, burning out, never got to see his family because by the time he got to Sunday, he would just want to sleep or rest, you mm-hmm. know, and he didn't really have a family life. He really was just working. And we ended up freeing up for him $6,000 a month, not even doing anything with investing, just freeing up cash flow. In this situation, helping them refinance debts and pay them off differently and stuff. $6,000 a month. What did they do for that first six, that first $6,000 bucks they freed up? They bought a four-wheeler. which Dave Ramsey would be rolling in his grave if he were dead. He'd be rolling in his grave, right? But you know, they bought a four-wheeler with it. They blew the money, so to speak.
Yeah.
But his wife, like when she was talking to me, she was in tears. She's like, you know what? That four-wheeler has been the best investment ever because he decided he's actually going to take off Saturdays, even half-day Fridays now. He's only working 4.5 days a week, and we have him for the whole weekend. She's like, I have my husband back, and my kids have their father back. She's like, this has been the best thing ever. And I thought about what that did for them, and I thought about that image, right, and how that creates a ripple effect, not just for them as a couple, but for their kids. Think about what that would do generation to generation to have an actual abundance mindset with money versus scarcity mindset and actually have prosperity. And think about what that does for the community and the country. And ultimately, that ripple effect goes across the world. And that's when it hit me right in the middle of that run was money ripples.
I love it.
I was like, crap, I got to run home. I had
that is a great story. That's cool.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, I love that.
Found it. It was $7.95 through GoDaddy. I said,
sold.
Sold.
That's awesome. You have some great stories there, Chris. So how can people get a hold of you and work with you?
Yeah, easiest way is you can go to moneyripples.com. You can just go to our website. Got tons of free information on that. We even have our Money Ripples podcast. You can find on iTunes or even on YouTube, you know, just like you guys. So yeah, definitely check those things out. Lots of free resources there.
Awesome. Are you on social media?
Yeah, we are. Just look up Money Ripples on everything, even TikTok. I don't know how to log into it. Everybody else on my team does. So, we're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you name it, LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, we'll have everything in the show notes so that our listeners can follow that. But, Chris, it's been amazing to have you on our show. You've added so much value. We could have done another episode, I think.
Yeah. We'll have to bring you back. So, but we appreciate it. And anything we can do for you, please let us know. And this has been awesome. So, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chris. See you guys.
We'll see y'all next week.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.